I'm Beth Golay, and this is Marginalia. Grant Ginder's new book, So Old, So Young, follows six friends over two decades, beginning at a college New Year's Eve party. The book drops in at only 5 points in time over these 20 years, leaving the reader to deduce how the relationships have evolved over time. I recently spoke with Grant Ginder about crafting these moments in time and exploring the shifts we all face as we grow up. Here's our conversation. So how would you describe this book to a reader? Do you have an elevator speech for it?
I do. I would say that it is the big chill for the millennial generation. The book follows six friends over the course of 20 years, but the catch is that we only see those friends at five parties over the course of those two decades. So we catch up with them in these quick bursts as they stumble through adulthood.
So you mentioned these friends, and I'm going to attempt to name them, and you tell me if I'm focusing on the wrong friends, because there were others beyond these. But in my opinion, they're Marco, Mia, Sasha, Theo, Richie, and Adam. Is that accurate?
Perfect. Okay. That is accurate.
Okay, so what should we know about this friend group?
Sure. So this is a friend group that met in college, by and large, at the University of Pennsylvania. They graduate in 2006, so right before the Great Recession. They're full of hope. They're full of life. And they intersect each other's lives throughout the 20 years and have to reckon with experiences like getting married and having kids and getting older and what effect those decisions have on their friendships.
You know, I saw the words from the title about halfway through the book. I think it was in one of Sasha's chapters. She asked herself, how had she become so old, so young? Talk to me about this title. Did you play a role in choosing the title, or is that a publisher thing? I never know how that works.
The title came about through some brainstorming sessions with my editor. And, you know, that feeling of being so old, so young is one that I think when you look around, particularly at millennials right now, we're first starting to reckon with, which is why I say the novel is sort of like our big chill moment, right? I think everyone's had the experience of kind of like waking up one day and being like, how am I not 22 any longer? I remember when I sat down and first started writing the book, I was having that experience. I would wake up literally the middle of the night, look around my apartment, see my husband, and be like, I can't figure out how I got to this exact moment in time. Like I was literally just graduating college, and now I have a marriage and a mortgage and a 401k and like very bad plantar fasciitis. And when did that happen? And so the novel, through these friends and through their experiences, reckons with that feeling of knowing that you're getting older, but not quite believing that it's happening to you.
You know, the book is about growing older, growing up, but it's also about how relationships change and how we change. What made you want to explore this shift about how friendships might change?
I've always been super interested in novels that explore friendships, particularly long-lasting friendships. I think that when we meet people, and you'll see this in the characters in the book, they meet each other in college, which is this incredibly formative time for friendships. I think that college is almost like a greenhouse for friendships, right? You like these 4 years where you have so many shared experiences, and you think that those friendships are going to last forever. But as the novel shows, you start making decisions that are not necessarily in the interest of the friendship, right? You get married to someone else. You start having a child that draws your attention away from the friendship, and which breeds, I think, if not resentment, then specific misunderstandings. And those misunderstandings lead to a lot of the dramatic moments in the book and these friends kind of talking past each other and not understanding where each other are in the spectrum of life.
So the format of this book is really interesting. As you mentioned, it dips into five parties over the span of 20 years. When writing this, how did you determine like the dates, the years that these events would take place? How did you decide, I think I'll drop in right here?
That's a really good question. So, right. So the book follows these five parties. I've always thought that parties play a kind of mythic role in the narrative of friend groups, right? You're always kind of thinking about like what happened at that wedding and what happened at that reunion. And so I wanted to play around with that. I myself graduated college in 2005. And these characters graduated in 2006. So that felt like a pretty good place to start for me. Beyond that, the book tracks these pivotal moments in people's lives, right? So that the first party is like a New Year's Eve party and they're in their 20s and they think they're going to be 20 forever. And they're making all kinds of bad decisions. Then we move to a wedding. Then we move to like a 35th birthday party. Then we move to a party in the suburbs. And so we're able to see these characters' lives and the shape of their lives evolve through the kind of parties that they're going to, which I think is kind of how life works. Like, I wouldn't be caught dead at a crowded apartment party on the Lower East Side right now. That sounds like my nightmare, right? But when I was 25, I thought it was the coolest thing in the world. And so the book, the novel, through these characters really explores, and through the structure of the parties, this evolution over the course of time.
I also loved how you paid attention to what was happening in the world at that time, whether it was the music they were listening to or what politicians were doing what where. So that also kind of helped place the characters for me. So was it challenging to decide how much you would reveal at each point, or was it just kind of a natural process?
That was actually probably the most challenging part of writing the novel, because again, you have the structure of five parties, which means that each section is really only covering like 3 hours of time in these lives. But there are time jumps of, you know, I don't know, 3 to 5 years between each section. And so deciding what little bits of information to give the reader about what was happening in the interim was really tough, because as a writer, your inclination is to just like catch everyone up through backstory. But to do that kind of like ruins the vibe of being at these parties, right? You want to be at these parties. And so that was probably the hardest part about writing the book.
Did you write the book as it appears, or did you have to jump around from party to party?
So I usually write just sort of like in chronological order, like right. Start at the beginning and I kind of, you know, and I write to the end. But with this book in particular, there was something like 11 drafts. And so the parties themselves evolved and changed, and what kind of party it was as the book evolved and changed, right? Which in a kind of a meta sense is I think also what the book is about, these characters evolving and changing over the course of time.
Because you had to not only know what happened at these parties, you had to know what happened to the characters in between the parties. It's almost like you had to plot out their lives and figure out which part we get to see.
Absolutely. Absolutely. In my head, I have like a whole, you know, timeline for each of these characters, but the book itself just drops in on them at these five different points in time.
Did you enjoy writing one particular time frame more than any other?
That's a really good question. I love writing weddings. And so the wedding chapter, or the wedding section, which is the second section of the novel, and it takes place outside Cancun, was very fun, because I think that we've all been to really over the top destination weddings, which is just sort of a hotbed of like drama and activity. And so that was very fun to write as well. And, you know, the first section when the characters are in their 20s, like, made me so nostalgic for my own kind of, you know, first decade in New York. So those two were very fun.
The chapters also, they rotated perspectives. So talk to me about writing in that way, you know, pivoting between character profiles, knowing who knows what and what one, you know, what one character would say and would not say. I mean, was that, I would imagine that's a huge challenge as well.
At the beginning, it definitely is. But again, the book is about friendship and the tensions that arise between friends. And so much of that comes from people either talking past each other or people having different perspectives of a particular event. And so to write a novel about friendship, I think you need these multiple perspectives, right? And so on the one hand, the perspectives were absolutely necessary to me, but you're right. At the beginning, it was really difficult to kind of get my head around all of these different perspectives. But by the end, it was really rewarding and useful because you could say to yourself, like, well, what would Richie think about this? What would Richie be doing in this various situation? And you were able to pull these characters in. I would say that also all of them, when you're writing a book like this with all these perspectives, everyone is a little bit of you. And so it allows you to kind of tap into yourself, the best and worst parts of yourself as you're writing the characters. And so in that way, I think it's always fascinating.
Have you listened to the audiobook?
I haven't yet. I'm dying to, though, because they brought in some really, really incredible talent. And they have like a full cast doing it, you know, everyone from Michael Urie to Joel Pace to Patty Murin. And it's, I can't wait to listen to it.
I read and listened at the same time. Our listeners will know I like to do that. And I do think that kind of helped me understand each character a little bit better because I had, you know, an actor kind of acting it out and speaking the way they thought that character would speak. I don't know if it's how you thought that character would speak, so I'd be curious to know that.
I'll be honest with you. I love hearing people and actors sort of interpret my writing with like zero direction from me. It's always really fascinating to see how someone else takes this text and does their own thing with it.
Well, I also loved, you know, I would think about this a little bit. I might be hearing Sasha, you know, an actor playing Sasha's perspective, but then that actor also has to maybe voice what Richie said to him. So even just to hear that difference was interesting to me.
Oh, totally. Totally.
Do you have, you know, a lifelong friend group like this, like these characters?
I have a really, really great group of friends from college that we're still in touch, and we're scattered now. Some of us are in New York. My closest friend, she's in London. Another one's in Philadelphia, another in DC. And so we're scattered a bit, but I do have a really close group of friends from college. And then I also have a very, very close group of friends here in New York. I think that having a group of friends or even just a handful of really, really close friends, that's what life's all about.
Now, correct me if I have this wrong. You teach writing at NYU, is that right?
I do. I do teach writing at NYU, but I teach essays. I don't actually teach fiction.
Okay. I was going to ask, how does teaching affect your own writing?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that it makes me a better writer because I'm constantly editing. You know, so much of like teaching writing is like teaching through editing and giving feedback on essays about like why something is working or why something isn't working. And then when you sit down to write something, of course, the first thing you do is forget everything that you've ever said to any student. And you're like, how do I do this? but eventually kind of when you calm yourself down, you remember the lessons that you gave and you're like, okay, well, let me try that. Let me see if it actually works, right? And it does make you a better writer. I also think it makes you kind of conversely, a much more empathetic to students because you're constantly writing and you know how hard it is. And you know that, you know, 99% of the times you're banging your head against the wall and trying to make a sentence work. And so watching them struggle when they're working on something, I have a lot of empathy for that because I have that struggle every day.
Do you have a hope for what readers will take away from this book?
I do. I hope that through these characters and through the story of them moving through, you know, 20 years at these five parties, I hope that it might make people more appreciative of their own friendships. And it might cause people to pick up the phone and maybe call a friend that they haven't spoken to in a while. I also hope that readers that are my age cohort that are millennials and that are kind of struggling with this business of middle age can come to it with grace and a realization that like this was always going to happen to us. We were always going to get old and that's okay. And it can be an exciting period and we can be curious about it.
Well, the book is So Old, So Young. Grant Ginder, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So Old, So Young by Grant Ginder was published by Gallery Scout Press. My next guest is Tori Maldonado. He is the award-winning author of several books for young readers, and today we're visiting about his debut picture book, Just Right. Welcome to Marginalia, Tori.
Hey, thank you for having me here. It's a pleasure.
So Just Right features a young boy named Toby. Tell us about Toby and his situation.
This story is largely autobiographical. I wrote this story when I needed to feel just right. So it's a story about a boy whose mood gets flipped from down to up. And, you know, a lot of people think that kids, you know, adults, we are living in a vacuum. We operate in a bubble. And the reality is we live in a village. And it takes a village to raise a child. It takes a village to raise a mood. So in this story, Toby, his village helps lift his mood and make him feel just right.
Well, you talk about moving, you know, a mood going from down to up. And this book, it's 16 pages long. But a few of those pages are heart-wrenching. You know, as a reader, we learn that Toby hopes to hear his father say the words, "I love you." And it's a bit sobering as to what some children are experiencing, isn't it?
It is. And I really have to give a hat tip to the School Library Journal and Betsy Bird. Betsy Bird, she read Just Right. And she said something that blew me away. You know, it's my first picture book. I'm expecting people to say it's just right. And she called it groundbreaking. Mm. And one of the reasons she called it groundbreaking is for the exact character that you put your finger on. She said, this dad, he absolutely exists. He is a caregiver. He is a relative. He is a person who we see all the time, but he's never been shown in a picture book. And she said it was sobering, and sobering in a very helpful way, because, you know, there's a yin and there's a yang. There's a heads to a coin and there's a tails to a coin. And that dad is not the standalone big influence on Toby. We have the uncle. And what was the contrast to the sobering, disconnected dad was this really plugged in uncle who was supercharging this little boy.
You know, in addition to the uncle, Toby's mother, Ma, gives him a great life lesson, doesn't she? About, you know, when something feels right. Talk to me about that.
Yeah. So I've written four very successful novels, and a lot of young people from fourth graders all the way through high school who've read my novels say, your books should be graphic novels. They should be comics. They should be shows. They should be movies. And one of the things they like about my books is the constant references to superheroes. And one superhero who I've referenced a lot is Miles Morales, Spider-Man. The reason is because 30 years of teaching and in my career as a writer, I try to encourage young people to trust their spidey sense, to trust their gut. And in this book, Toby, it starts out with him and his mom at a shopping mall, and he's looking for the right gift. And he asks his mom, what should I get? And she says, trust your instinct, trust your gut, trust your heart. It feels right. It's just right. And that's really important for all of us, you know, smaller and taller, to remember that we have this internal GPS. And if we follow it and it doesn't hurt us and it doesn't hurt anybody else, it could make us feel just right and it could make the world feel just right.
You know, you mentioned your other novels, your four books. They were written for children ages 10 and up. And Just Right is written for ages 4 to 8 years old. Talk to me about writing for different age groups. Did you have to pivot in any way?
There was some pivoting, and there was some steady streams that run through novel writing that also really nourish picture book writing. There's this TLC song, Don't Go Chasing Waterfalls. Please stick to the rivers and the streams that you're used to. And I kind of stuck to those rivers and those streams and those lakes that I was used to, because I'm known for my novels being short and having a lot of punch. And you had mentioned that, you know, there's 16 pages, but some of those pages are powerful pages. And in that way, I was hoping to get that reaction that you just shared. I wanted someone to say, wow, this is short, It's fast and it has pow. In terms of the pivot, when you have a novel, there's way more page count. You have lots more things that you can say. And so I had to pivot and really, you know, pull certain ideas out and toss that idea this way and say, this is the essential. I got to keep this. But while I was trying to trim the fat with my picture book, I stuck with another piece of advice that runs through all of my books. And it's the advice that comes from Maya Angelou, that people will forget what you say, but they'll never forget how you make them feel. So while I was writing Just Right, it was really important for me to leave readers with big feelings, you know, that sobering, heart-wrenching feeling you mentioned, but then also that big feeling of, wow, this feels just right. I feel more right. The world feels lighter.
You mentioned how your novels, they're shorter, but they pack a powerful punch. And I saw on your website that your books are described collectively as thin but thick with complexity. And you were able to achieve that in this picture book as well. Was that because of the illustrative nature of the book? Did that help to pack that punch?
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for saying that. And I'm glad that this is being recorded because I can play back that compliment. thank you for telling me that my picture book, Just Right, is also thin but thick with complexity. I feel like this time around, the picture book format chose me. I didn't choose it. And the reason is when I wrote the book. I was writing this at a time where I needed to feel my mood flip instantly to up. I needed a powerful roller coaster ride of fiction. And a novel wasn't going to cut it. Me writing a novel wasn't going to cut it. Me reading a novel wasn't going to cut it. So the picture book voice started to come out. And what I realized was, hey, I'm trying to deliver the most with the least. I'm trying to deliver some really big feelings in a small format. And it helped because when I finished reading the book, I felt great. And I'm really happy with what I'm hearing from readers too. I'm getting young readers who, I just was interviewed by an educator and her daughter was supposed to ask one question and the daughter took over the interview. She did the whole interview and you had to see her. She was beaming and she was talking about how much she loved the book. And her first words were, I need another. I want another. And that just told me that I was delivering a lot in a way that the reader would want more. And that's what I hope all my books do. I hope, you know, you want more, you want more, you want more. Because the goal is to hook kids to books.
So you've been a teacher in New York public schools for how many years?
Almost 30 years.
You know, I read that your stories are inspired by your experiences and those of your students. How do your students influence you with your writing?
I don't want to let my students down. I'll never forget this boy. He meets me on the first day of school this year. And he says, wait a minute, what's your last name? And I said, Maldonado. He said, oh my God, you wrote Tight. And I said, yeah, I wrote Tight. You read it? He said, I read it. I read it in the fifth grade. And I read that book like five times. I'm not kidding. You're the GOAT. I love this book. You need to write a sequel. And that puts a pressure on me. It puts a pressure on me to keep young people that electrified by my writing. So I don't want to let young people down. When I give a young person a book, it's the same as when I teach a lesson. I want the young person to say, I want to read this again, or I want to read something like it again. And same way with classes. When I teach, I want young people to say, oh my God, the class is over. Can I have you two periods? How can we have you the whole day? Not letting young people down and uplifting young people, keeping them unplugged in, that's really important to me. Another thing, you know, teaching for 30 years has taught me what I've known my whole life, that there's a lot that young people carry. There's a lot of weight. And as an educator, I don't want to add any more weight to a young person's life. So I try to keep my classes light. I try to keep my writing light. I try to create a safe space where they are invited. And once they're invited, they feel like it's roller coaster fiction. it, there are these ups that they want. There's these downs that are not too down for them. And that at the end, they want to read more. They want to experience more of my work and similar work.
I had the pleasure of reading the physical book, looking at the book, which is so important for a picture book because illustrations convey so much more than the words can on the page. But I also read it while listening to the audiobook that you narrated.
Wow.
And so I'm wondering, what can an audio narration add to the book for the reader, especially if it's narrated by the person who wrote it?
Yeah. First, I'm in a state of awe because I haven't even heard the audio book yet. How did I do?
You did great.
Oh, thank you. I have to give a compliment to Penguin Random House Audio. They've set me up with amazing producers and engineers who really care about my story. And this story specifically, Just Right, has a funny studio story. The producer for my narration of Hands, he asked to be on my next book. So this book, he reads Just Right. And he was going to phone it in. He was going to guide me through the narration through a Zoom interaction. And lo and behold, I get to the studio. He's there. I said, well, I thought you were going to phone it in. And he said, are you kidding me? I had to rearrange my schedule because this book means so much to me. Now, when you have somebody who really cares and is that connected to your body of work and they're guiding you, they're going to bring the best out of you. And there were times where I would read and he would say, you got to do that over. And I said, why? And he said, because that's not how I heard my dad react to me in the same way that that dad reacted to Toby. And I know you didn't hear it that way. And then, so he really challenged me to open up the treasure chest of my heart and dig through certain gems and certain unexplored items. And then bring that to the narration. So I really think that a narration can be different than a reading because one, it's my voice, pushing forth my voice. Two is the style that I write in. You know, reading the book for me, it was very personal and I felt like I was the only one who could read the story of Just Right.
Do you have a hope for what readers, young and old, will take away from this book?
Yeah. You know, my mom, she had this saying, she said, you know, the dog or the cat that chases its tail will never catch it. And there's so many of us who spend lifetimes trying to chase for love. And, you know, Ma tells Toby, you bought two gifts. You bought one for your dad and you bought one for Uncle. Go take the socks to Uncle. And Toby discovers that, you know, it's okay to leave the table when love is not being served. It's being served somewhere. So one of the things that I really want, I hope that young people learn from reading this book is to trust their instincts, their guts, their hearts, and go to their just right people. Go to their just right places. Do their just right things. Oh, another message that I want to share is that I know that the world would be more just right if we all got it just right with the people who are just right in front of us.
Well, the book is Just Right. Tori Maldonado, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. And thank you for a Just Right interview that has me feeling just right.
Just Right by Tori Maldonado was published by Nancy Paulson Books. Join us next week as we speak with Tyori Jones for her novel, Kin. Marginalia was produced at KMUW Wichita and is part of the NPR network. Our editors and producers for this week's show are Haley Krausen and Lou Ann Stevens. Torin Anderson composed our theme music. This is Marginalia. I'm Beth Golay.
Maybe you already know about naked short selling. Maybe you've personally shorted stocks yourself. But do you know about the time short sellers ruined a Super Bowl, basically?
For me, I was a little late, but red flags went up like, what is going on? This is really scary.
At Planet Money, we get the story behind the money to explain how money works. Listen on the NPR app or wherever you get your podcasts.